It's now time for the show, Bayesian Rhythm and Rhyme, as we say good evening to the host, Sluggy Dan.
At 6:30 p.m. 6:30 p.m. Ollie.
Yes, sir.
Give us that tune, and then we'll come back to our special guest.
All right. Well, the tune is called yes. Festival High from Mr. Magic.
Mr. Magic! Yes!
Festival High, Mr. Magic. The year was 2005.
That is what I'm talking about.
Back with you, Sluggy.
2000 and what?
2005.
Which year was that? Woo! You're going back in time, in time, 2005. Wow, that's about 18 years ago. No, you say absolutely love it. 434-1790. I love the conversation last week. I want to hear from the public today. 434-1790. What do you think about when you hear the term Bayesian culture? When you hear the term Bayesian culture, what do you think about mostly? What comes into your mind? And what comes into your mind, is that the thing you are most proud about when you think about Bayesian culture? 434-1790. Call in and let's chat. Remember, St. Andrew Carnival is on November 30th. St. Andrew Carnival is on November 30th. And I will be at St. Andrew Carnival along with all my BIM, Got Talent, DJs, young artists, and the whole crew. We'll be taking part in that. St. Andrew have so many hidden treasures, so many parts of St. Andrew that majority of Bajans never ever went to in their life, and it's absolutely amazing. So I want to encourage everyone to come out to St. Andrew Carnival, St. Andrew's Carnival, November 30th. Ollie, introduce them to our special guest today. And don't forget, listeners, 434-1790. Call in. I want to hear what you think about mostly when you hear the terms Bajan culture. Ollie, introduce our special guest today.
Well, Sluggy's special guest today is Orlando Clement. Orlando Clement was born in Barbados and raised in New York and Barbados. In New York, Orlando trained in music production at the legendary Motown Records, and he has over 15 years experience in club DJing, radio broadcasting, and music production. Orlando has worked with music and media industry heavyweights such as Hot 97 FM Radio in New York City, MTV Bass in Europe, Channel 4, and Choice FM in the UK. In 2003, drawing on his music-making skills, Orlando set up a music project for disadvantaged young people in London, a project which developed first into a specialist music school and later into a secondary school and sixth form college, working with over 300 young people annually. He provides a positive black male role model, and his patience and commitment to his students has helped him to achieve unprecedented success at engaging young offenders and hard-to-reach young people, including a reported 30% reduction in reoffend rates within the group of youth offenders he was working with in Southwark. Orlando has been recognized in the UK by the Nationwide Community Achievement Award for Voluntary Endeavor and by the Mayor of London for his outstanding contribution to life in London. In 2020, in the wake of COVID, Orlando built an education technology solution designed to support young people from disadvantaged backgrounds and to enable teaching staff to work more efficiently and more smartly via the internet. Called EduVantage, he then developed the platform into a comprehensive school information system that allows the entire school community, including administrators, teachers, students and parents, to access and share relevant information that can drive whole school improvement and educational excellence. Ladies and gentlemen, Orlando Clement.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate being on the show, and it's an absolute honor.
Yes, good evening, my brother. First things first, how are you?
I'm very good. I'm still acclimatizing to the heat in Barbados.
Yeah, how it is coming from the cold. Cause you know, a few weeks ago, I was up there and we met yeah, in London. You know, you absolutely love it. I prefer the London weather. Anytime, you know, you love the cold. It's heat. You know, you can't really handle the heat. It's got me miserable to all. But how you liking the weather versus the cold you just came from?
Well, I think this year particularly is unprecedented because the temperature in England right now, particularly in London, is quite warm. We're between 20 to 13 degrees depending on the day, and that's never happened before. So coming to Barbados,
yeah, boy. If 20 and 13 is warm for you, we were glad for that. I know 20 and 13 in Barbados is extremely cool.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. In Barbados, it is so the humidity is just, it really caught me off guard, the humidity here. So this is just to show climate change and what's happening around the world and how it's affecting, you know, particularly the Caribbean and the UK.
Is real? You think we could reverse it, though?
I think we're at that tipping point right now. If we don't do changes right now, we probably won't be able to, but something needs to happen within the next few years or it's not going to be able to reverse.
Because in order to, well, you can't reverse it because what happened already happened. You can't repair the damage in the, you know, in the atmosphere. What we could do is stop speeding up the process.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Well, good. What we could do is, what we could do is start speeding up the process. But it can't reverse it. But I agree with you, Orlando. I honestly think some things seriously must be done urgently.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, but thanks. You heard the song. Was that song before? What was your stage name when you were an artist? I mean to out you.
Oh, my artist name was Orlando Perez. I was in the House of Soca.
And, okay.
Orlando Sorry. Perez.
Oh, you said your artist name was Orlando Perez. You got any songs that you recorded already?
Yeah, of course. My last songs I finished in 2014 was called Born This Way. Orlando Perez, Perez, and it was called
Nice. Ollie, look for that in the system. Orlando Perez. Let me see if you got any Orlando Perez in the system.
You got quite a few.
Let me take in Ollie. Let me take in Orlando. You mind if you listen to one or two? You mind?
I'm happy with that. Sure, of course.
Oh, cool, good. People, ladies and gentlemen, Orlando Perez. You heard Ollie read out his bio. He's also a head teacher. A businessman, you know, an artist, and so much more. And I feel so proud to have him on the show this evening. You know, a son of the soil, Ollie, someone from right here in Barbados who's now reached the levels of a head teacher in London. So we'll come back and speak to him about that. But right now we're taking some Orlando Perez. Take it away, Ollie.
Before 7 o'clock, music from Orlando Perez, the song entitled Barbados. Back with you, Sluggy.
Orlando, was that one of your tunes?
That's correct. That was one of my tunes. You picked a really, really good one, actually, for this program.
Oh, nice. Did you write that one yourself?
I wrote that myself. I produced it myself. Yeah, all of it was done by me.
You wrote? Wait. Hold on, man. You hiding talents from me, man. You wrote and produced that one, my brother?
Yes, I wrote and I produced that myself. I have a recorded. Well, I've been producing stuff over maybe 20 years now, and I play classic. Yes. I play classical piano. So, yeah, I wrote, orchestrated the whole thing, and wrote the lyrics and sang it and mastered it down and released it in Barbados. I can't remember the year it was released, but yeah.
Nice. Only if you got the year there, only you can let us know the year.
No, unfortunately, I can Google it for you, but the year isn't on the label here. I can Google it for you.
That's no problem. Orlando, so speak about this song called Barbados. Why did you see it fit to write this song? And where were you at the time when the idea for this song came to mind?
Okay, so there's multiple answers to this question. Living in England, I've always felt disconnected in a sense from not being at home, not being here. And I always wanted to find a way that I could contribute back to my country, to Barbados. And I thought at the time, being in music, singing soca, and in the UK, and promoting Barbados in that way was the way to go. This is where this song came into play, the lyrical content of it. Was to highlight Barbados and how amazing it is, not just for the Barbados public, but also for England, not just England, Europe. And I wanted this song to really highlight Barbados in the UK and Europe. So hence the reason why that connection that I wanted back to my country came into this lyrical content that you're hearing right now, but that you just heard.
Oh, nice, Orlando. So are you still producing and writing? We can be joined by Mr. Eastman soon. They're going to bring in Mr. Eastman, because we plan to do lots of work together, and being by got so many projects coming off. You know, Randy got to come London with me on one of these projects for sure. You know, he's saying it here upon here. Yeah. And salute to the National Peace Program and Minister Lynn and the whole crew. As you know, Randy, I do everything together. He runs everything that I do, just that people they see the face, people they see my face, you know, and I used to get the prayers, but everything behind the scenes, Randy do everything, even up to the paperwork, up to the writing, up to the producing, up to the building the concepts, to the shows. I mean, every single thing, you know, you don't care. It's just that people love me, so it's the face people they see, but I do nothing but talk. Even sometimes how to explain certain things. You know, a lot of the things they know about, especially about cultural imperialism and so on. And see, when you say you felt a bit out of touch being by you and in London and so on, like topics like that, and how we keep culture alive abroad, topics like that is things that, you know, management, Mr. Randy Eastman, who run Quantum Productions, will bring to me. So I got to salute Randy. He just told me, Orlando, I can let you come on and tell yourself. Randy, if you're listening outside, you got the Zoom link still, join via the Zoom link. I was going to tell Orlando, you tell me, but I ain't telling you, let you come in and tell him yourself. So people could see persons like yourself, Mr. Eastman, if you're outside listening, so people could see how you start and persons that help you get to where you are now. Because, you know, people only see the success, but it's like when we pay homage. So join the Zoom link, Mr. Eastman, and come through. Yes, Orlando. So you're still producing and you're still working, because I know you're busy now. And we can talk about you being a head teacher. You know, we can talk about that for sure. But but you are so busy, you're still producing and you're still writing?
Unfortunately, no.
Don't do it, Orlando. Don't say it, no.
2014 was the tipping point for me where I entered a new way of thinking and passing the knowledge that I have on to students at my school and really focusing the ethos of the school around my culture and upbringing in Barbados, which has made the school extremely successful, engaging disadvantaged young people and you know, encouraging them to do positive things in amongst the community, and we do that through music. So for me, it's not just me now shedding a light on myself and singing songs, but is, as you said, remove myself in the background now, and I'm just having pushing young people forward in order to so I'm kind of singing music and doing music through my students and any young person that I come in contact with that I work, you know, through the types of, and that's in Barbados as well, because I'm sure we're going to talk about the student exchange and stuff like that as well. So for me, that's the way that my music is being lived on, is through the students.
Fair enough. I can't, you know, I will encourage you to continue, but as most people might know, I'm also qualified in music, studied at Barbados Community College, you know, and then I did vocal exams with London College of Music too, you know, and did really well at Barbados Community College. And then with London College of Music, vocal exams, I got distinction. But I probably ain't do anything in that same amount of time for the same reason. I guess that's why God put two of us together, you know, and I got to thank Randy too, for Randy to introduce you to myself. It's like you going to London. I got a really good friend in London. I think you should meet him and have a conversation with him face to face. And, you know, although my time is hectic down there, being by Randy's sake, both of us got the same love and respect for him. So we both said, you know, if Randy said we should meet, we have to meet. Because he don't just do things like that. You know what I mean? He don't just tell people them things that then he would do. So we met, and I'm extremely glad. But I qualified in music myself. Even I love you, say you play a classical piano. I trained in the French horn with the police band. So, you know, see, yeah. French horn is my main instrument, but all my qualifications is in vocals. Even had times when people consider me probably the best vocalist in BIM. You know, you'll hear things like that, and not like one or two persons, like hundreds of persons will say it, type it. But then through me seeing a need, I think let you speak to this. This is probably why you stop for even deeper reason. True seeing a need for me to really push along other people is, and that I stopped by choice. It happened. You get me? So many young people could benefit from the knowledge and the experience you went through. And then, you know, you reach a certain level where, you know, you've got a career going, your family going, and you see it fit that you can help out other young people. So you just start doing it instead of me focusing on me and me being a singer up front, you know, and me being an artist or me playing the horn all the time. I just, there's a need for me to step back and really, really help the young people. And thanks to personally Ollie and Ronnie and Scott LaRock on 95.3, you know, almost every week it will bring to young people, and they will never tell me no. They will open up the platform, any young person to bring at any time, you know. So me seeing that, you know, I could have taken the shine for myself. I could have been pushing my music only, you know what I mean? So could have you. You know, I could have pushed you on music only. You know, you got your own school. I got my class here. I got my radio show here. We could be pushing my own thing, but I saying that I don't think I will get as much joy. If it's just me, yeah, I won't mind the success. But if I could say, well, 50 of these young people come through me, to me, that feel much better.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you on that. There's that tipping point where you kind of say to yourself, well, for me, at least, you know, managing the, being a head teacher, you call them principals in Barbados, but okay. Being a principal/head teacher, having my family.
Ollie, check the Zoom, Mr. Eastman is ready. Check the Zoom, Ollie. Go ahead, Orlando.
Yeah, you know, running a school, my family, life, and then the music, because music I would need to then, you know, tour and perform different places. It was just too much. Seeing the love and passion that young people have never heard of Soca or have no idea about the Caribbean, educating them with that and the culture of Barbados and what it is about, to me, was it became my highlight. You know, it was so exciting to see how they, you know, it was like they, it was a magnet. They just magnetized to just the whole thing was so good, the culture, how they speak, percussions, all this stuff, where it's come from, originally from Africa. So this is a major learning curve for a lot of young people in Europe that's not originally from the Caribbean, and giving them a chance to understand and see just not the musical content from the Caribbean, but a way of life in the Caribbean. For me, it was paramount that that we embedded that into my school, and to ensure that young people had a greater understanding outside of their local community that they live in.
Oh, that's so true. No. How did your musical journey, and then after we can go on, you know, we want to speak, let's just speak about the exchange program we are doing. You know, we're doing it next year, summer, but pushing to come down for Christmas somehow. even if we bring down one young person with me. You know, because next year we are doing about 20. This year we had 10. You know, thanks to the Most High God, we were able to carry down 10. But next year we want it to be 20. And of course, that can be at your school. But this year we're pushing the carry down at least one performer. We do at least a Christmas program. I don't care even if it's for our, I see the benefits of children doing exchanges with each other all over the world. I see the benefits. I want you to speak though firstly of how your musical journey start.
It started with me finding one of these old turntables that used to lift up and come over.
Oh, you're mashing your father. Oh, you're taking your father, your grandfather turntable, because they mash up my father. Big up Charles State from Jackson listening. Like this short, oh, my father turntables.
Yep, that's how it started. one of those, and I was fascinated about scratching and mixing music. And that was my first, introduction to music. People like, when I was in Barbados, people like Griner were just singing, you know, lyrical content and stuff. I was fascinated about the commentary soca and how they use words to have double meanings and you have to kind of read between the lines. Red Plastic Bag, Griner. This is where it started for me. And when I moved to the States, the influence from the States came into play. My cousins, they worked on radio in New York, and they would take me into the radio stations, and I would sit there and watch them as they did their shows. And again, that's where the other love came in for radio, and the way that you can actually reach thousands, millions of people in one little room, you can do that. So my love and passion for music really came from, you know, originally from Barbados with you know, the commentary. So you still call it commentary soca? Is that what it's called still? Or
that, social commentary?
Yeah, commentary
soca. Social commentary. Yeah, so we got social commentary, power soca, and sweet soca, groovy soca.
I'm talking about social commentary.
Social commentary.
Yeah. And how they use smart wording to mean two things, if you see what I mean. I love that. I just love it. How the music, the instruments along with the vocals, just the whole thing, how it just comes together. I was fascinated with that. And then being introduced to hip hop and that American culture thing, you know, was the other next step for me. And through my cousins is how I ended up working for Motown Record Productions, because I would be in their studios there when they're there, I'm there. And I learned through my cousins, radio broadcasting and music production. Back then we were doing reel to reel. We're not talking this digital stuff now. We're talking, you know, all analog stuff. Like, you made a mistake, you got to cut it out, you got to start back again. But this is where my passion starts. And for then that was all she wrote, really. From there, it was singing, Learning instruments, and I didn't want to call a bass player in or a keyboardist in and have to wait a week if he's busy. So I've learned how to do it myself. I've self-taught how to play these instruments and in order to get my recordings done. Then the same thing with mastering. That was another hurdle, and again I went down that route on how to master. So every step of the stage that I've been through in my musical career was a need to learn something in order to push me forward without having to depend on someone else to do it for me. When I moved to England in 1999, and that's when I really, music for me really exploded, because there's a huge Caribbean community in London, as I'm sure you're aware of that. I felt me doing and being part of the music there would just widen my, not just my knowledge, but the community as well, and me contributing within the arts, although I was not in Barbados. It was the closest thing to Barbados. And I never thought for a million pounds, I never thought I would be working with young people. That was not in my scope. And I was approached by a record school, a DJing school, asking me if I would want to teach people, because I used to scratch DJ and stuff like that, asking me if I would want to teach people to do this. Little did I know that was the door for me with working with young people, because through that is where I started meeting young disadvantaged young people on the streets of London, and through music, using turntables and engaging with them like that, was able to get them off the streets and focus on something positive. I was hired by the Metropolitan Police to go into estates. We call them estates. I'm not sure what you call them in Barbados, really bad areas. We call it estates in England, to work with young people through music. And then later on down, maybe 5 weeks later, bring an undressed police officer in and say, "This is my friend. He's a police officer," and try to break down those contentions between the police and young people in London. And it's just, I could go on and on with this. It's just, my journey, it's been a very difficult one. And to be honest, Sonia, my better half, I guess, she's, I'm the visionary and the one that does the stuff, and she's the one in the background that does all the writing and the bidding and everything else to make the company work. I think she might be listening in. So her family's already from Trinidad. So again, with that support from Sonia, supporting that end of it, and I'm doing the front end, dealing with the people, it just evolved into a secondary school.
No, that, listen, Ray, that is amazing. You ever had that in the cards? You ever see that in the cards, that you'll one day be running a school?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
We're like, you see, okay, it's funny here.
Yeah, I never thought I was going to be a principal. That never came into my mind. I know I had to retrain. I had to retrain myself, and the process was long, to get onto that, to that platform where you're, in education and you're teaching, because we in England, there's lots of checks and balances for schools, and being a principal of a secondary school, the amount of the criteria that they're asking for is quite in depth, to be honest. So for me, it was a real learning curve from being this person that makes music and, like very artistic and can make stuff and do stuff. And now I was very bottled down with, I have to do A, B, C, D, F, and G. And there's no other way to do it but this way. So you know, being a musician and being a person that loves music, it was the polar opposite of that. So it was a big learning curve for me as well. You know, and that new kind of step in my career and my for what I wanted, but I knew it was something that I had to do in order to, for me to reach young people on a wider scope, in order for me to have the ability to make substantial changes in education, particularly in Southeast London. So it was a must. I had to do it, so I did it.
Yes, boy, necessity, boy. Necessity is a serious thing.
Yeah,
a lot of things that's come out of the need. We have Mr. Eastman. Shout outs to Mr. Randy Eastman coming in. Management Quantum Productions, you know, which is the management that runs Sluggy Dan, everything, Beja Rhythm and Rhyme, Bim Got Talent. You know, all the projects and programs, they do everything is under management, because they're always here, Orlando. When you start, you think you could do it on your own. You know, especially when you're good, right? Orlando, you know, you think, well, I could do this on my own, man. And then you quickly realize, no, boy, you need someone to handle all the nonsense in the background, all the craziness that's got on. And, you know, need someone to organize all of that so you can focus on what you're doing. Say, like, all the young people out there, no, and who you choose is also very important. Just want to remind the youngsters out there listening, because again, the youngsters WhatsApping me already, so I love when the young people listening. Who you choose as friends is also very important, youngsters, and who you choose to be around, what circles you choose to be in, is also very, very important. I just want to share a lesson, because I learned that lesson. Thankfully, I didn't have it till I'm too old to learn it. Thankfully, I didn't have it the same bad happen. And thank God that I learned that lesson. So it's all young to go deal. Who you choose, what circle you choose to be in, and who you choose to be around. So important to determine your success. And funny, big up Mr. Eastman coming in. Mr. Eastman here, Orlando, who is no head teacher. You know, I'm sure you work with him. Did you get to do any recordings with Mr. Orlando Vane when he was an artist?
I met Orlando, but let me first endorse you, Sluggy. I know you endorse me as management, but to be honest, it's easier when you have someone like Sluggy who pretty much self-manages too and ensures that everything that needs to be done is done. So it's a lot easier. And he does a lot of the work. I know he gives me a lot, but Sluggy does a lot of the legwork himself too. So it's just a matter of oversight in those cases. So I have to give you props too. As well,
boy. Green work, boy. You know what I mean? Can't clap around it, boy.
Exactly.
Don't care how you feel, boy. Can't clap. Yeah, go ahead.
So, in terms of Mr. Orlando Clement,
yes.
Good night, my brother. We would have met, I don't remember the exact year, Orlando. I think it was between 2001 and 2005.
Yeah.
He was a member of House of Soca Tent. I think I was a band leader at that time, or just before he became band leader, I think we met. And yes, he was an artist. Somehow we got connected because obviously the band had rehearsed him. You know, we got to talking about, you know, similarities in music and whatnot. I learned that he was a producer. And I had not too long started my own studio. Right at that time, it was just in a little bedroom. At that point in time, I had a little laptop. Really didn't have much programs. But I was inspired by people like Pernell Farley, Chris Allman, Anthony Lohar. And I think Pernell had given me some stuff to start with. And Orlando said, hey, I've got contacts for these particular programs. And at the time, he put me onto Nuendo and Cubase. I think Fruity Loops as well. I think, already, yeah, you and Hinges are Fruity Loops, right? So
yeah.
I still actually have the programs. It is a funny story. So Bernard Yearwood always talks to me about paying it forward. Bernard would have paid it forward to me in the development of my career. Orlando, you would have paid it forward to me by giving me those programs, all those plugins years ago. So I actually have an online folder which I created. And a lot of youngsters will come to me and say, well, sir, I want to get in production, but I can't afford these programs or I need access to these programs. I have an online folder that I actually share with them. And those are the exact same programs that I sent to them, as long as they're using PC. I've also created one for Mac, but you know, that's been recently. But if they're using a PC, they are still using that particular download folder that you would have given me those how much ever years ago, 27 years now, Sluggy.
Wow, wow.
It was only 5 years ago, but now it's 27 years, Sluggy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I give thanks to you for that, opening that door for me and allowing me to experiment as a young producer, as a young musician. And now I have the chance to pay it forward to youngsters who want to be musicians and producers as well. So that was our initial connect. In terms of working together, I think you would have come to the studio, Orlando. I don't think we produced a track together, but you were basically teaching me how to do particular things and how to navigate. I was really young in the game at that time. So it was more a learning process in what we did. I think we probably did a one or two vocal, but nothing major. I think we really need to do something together for sure.
And in these programs in the early days, you used when you were producing Maybu?
Yeah, for sure. Nuendo. Maybu was produced on Nuendo with the band Electric. We had Robin Watts involved in that, David Haynes for sure, Marzo himself, and all the members of the band came together to make that song happen. Big ups to Adrian Mack, who was the manager of the band at that time. He facilitated as well. Got me my first little small mixing board for the studio. The band came together and did that. You know, as you said, it's like it was teamwork. Everybody really pitched in to make it happen. Jason made that big contact in Jamaica for Hawkeye. You know, so it really was a team effort.
Yeah, you never know what spark you can get from something. So you may do something small. Like, yeah. He might give you the program, you end up, and you know, I mean, somebody may take the in there big, but then you start doing wrong.
Actually, your son using it too, because remember, I gave you some programs for him to use. That's the same folder, funny enough.
Well, as you know, like, someone may how he give you the program, you know, you start playing around on it, then you get competent in producing in the whole, and then. After that, you go a big hit, you know. But when you first start, you know, you never see the connection. You never see where it's going, or you never can imagine where it's going. Cause he said he never imagined that he would be running a school, you know, or being a head teacher, you know. Yeah. To be on that trajectory is crazy. Randy, in terms of, because he was an educator here in Barbados as well, I heard him speak about being heavy in producing and so on at first, right? But then the need stopped him and basically took him away from it.
Yeah.
What Orlando said before you come on, and you know, one time you used to do enough songs per week, not per month or per year, per week. In a week, one time you would have got so many songs, but then you get heavy in helping the youngsters as well. And now we've got youngsters like Rack on Drums, salute to him. You know, you got big names like Milo Clark, salute to him again, Shamar Coombs. Was it something similar that happened to you?
Definitely the exact same thing, actually. Because when I first got into teaching, I was heavy into performance and cutting gigs and doing a lot of gigs, also doing a lot of production too, like you said. We would have worked together as well, Sluggy. When you first got into reggae music, we would be dropping rhythms, I don't know, I guess, like you said, every day, you know, every single day we were working on some kind of project to completion. Starting to teach at Parkinson in 2008, the mandate changed and the demand changed as well. When I saw the need for youngsters and the need for opportunity and their thirst for wanting to grow, their thirst for wanting to develop and become better. And it so happened that music was the vessel that Parkinson at that point in time. Fortunately, having the kind of talent that I was exposed to, because I can't take credit for it, those kids had the talent. I simply facilitated, but they had the talent, they had the drive, they had the unnerve, you know, they wanted
to put in the word itself.
Yeah, man. Definitely, I can't take credit for that at all. I simply give the thanks.
You say it all the time, Randy, but you say all the time, don't give me it. Then again, you know you serve me to soul, but get that from you. You know what I mean? Don't give me the credit when I point the word. I was fucking
sure. They worked so hard, and I realized I started to lean more towards education. I don't think education was a part of my scope either initially, because I was into finance and accounting and management, and I switched careers. Ooh.
And then jamming on stage with John King and all kind of thing.
Yeah, traveling and touring, I think, too, right? But the need and seeing how education changed lives, how simple influence or, you know, offering an opportunity to a youngster could change their entire life. That took the precedence for me. And my priorities changed at that point in time. So I started to pull back on performance and playing, et cetera. And I focused more on the education. And that led to me then going to do a master's in music education and the diploma was in education here at Erdiston. The master's was in England, diploma here in Barbados. And right now, I don't know, that's where my life is, you know, education and helping young people, guiding them and ensuring a path in music, you know. So yeah, pretty much the same story as Orlando.
Yes. Orlando, I got a question, my brother, that I will pose to you, and then Randy can answer the question equally. Personally, in your school, in your, you know, your high school is, you all call it high school?
Secondary school.
Then you're a secondary school, and then Edvantage. Yeah. Was there any projects or programs that you implemented and you've done that, you know, obviously was hard when it started, but then over the years doing it, you see a major change in any of the youth? And if so, how did you use these projects and programs, and how did it change the youth that you came into contact with? And the same question for Randy.
Do you want me to go first or Randy?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Today's show is yours, so you're always first.
Thank you. Randy, your memory, just going back a bit, sorry.
No problem. You can answer Randy, then the follow, buddy.
Your memory of that is amazing.
What we tell you, because when they say, oh, you don't believe me, tell you, Orlando, tell you about your memory. He's sick.
Yeah, wow.
He's crazy. You about to forget nothing?
No, you remember.
I ain't sure with that.
Hats off to you, Randy, because you remember that like yesterday. And
don't forget, when people have influence on me, man, you would have played a major role at that point in time. You know,
it's something that would be stamping your mind.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I really do appreciate that, Randy, because I actually do look up to you right now. The tables are turned.
I can tell you, Orlando, he's younger than both of us.
I think the table is turned. I think any young person who's working with Randy should, you know, he's like a role model and someone that young people should aspire to, because the things that you're doing and the love and passion for it, you don't need to say anything. It just shows from what you're doing, your passion and love for it. So, you know, that's, for me, I saw that instantly the last time that we met. You know, there was a time where maybe 8 years went by that I didn't see you, and then I saw you again, and that's the first thing that came to light to me, was that passion for music, the culture, and more so the young people that you're working with, and for me that was, you know, it is in line with my vision and how I feel as well. And I'm sure the same thing goes for Pernell, as some of the other amazing professionals that I've come in contact with over the years in Barbados. But anyways, I just want to say that, but I'll go back to the original question that was asked to me. The answer is yes. And it might be regarding to applications that I may have put in place in order to help young people. So, I mean, originally, it would have been the musical software. As a school, we register with Steinberg, which is Cubase, with Apple Macintosh. They recognize us as a school educational establishment, and many others, Pro Tools, Native Instruments, Fruity Loops, they all recognize us. So we get our software at a reduced rate in England as a school. So it gives me the chance that I can introduce these softwares to young people in the hopes that something that they may be able to use, take into fact, though, it needs to be cost effective for that young person as well. so that they will be able to buy it and not only use it in our school. So that's initially the software stuff, but the software that I developed myself within the school, but it deals with the wider diaspora of education. And this is EduVantage I'm talking about. And I noticed it's not just the applications that young people use and make stuff with, but it's the application that adults, teachers and management and administrators are using to ensure that quality of teaching and learning and engagement within the school is you know, 100%. Hence the reason why EduVantage was developed, because I developed that programming in my free time at home. I'll be sitting down coding. So it sounds a bit boring and a bit nerdy, but that's what I did. And over the last 10 years, I developed this software to where it's at the minute, where it's ready for the wider market. But we'll get into that a little bit later. And a big push for that was COVID in 2020, where I had to really rush that program. And let me explain what it is. It's helping young people identifying safeguarding. So if a young person is at risk of at home, maybe being abused or getting involved with the wrong people on the block, and we hearing stuff being talked about, this can be documented on the system. And it can be marked on that student as a safeguarding, and things can happen from there. So it's a paper trail in a sense to safeguarding in the classroom with their participation in class, and academic achievement within class can be marked as well within there, we call it Mark Book. And it goes on. Parents have a login. They can have direct contact to the teacher. They can see the student, their child's timetable, they can see behavior logs, point system. I mean, the list goes on with this. So what I wanted to do is connect up parents, the home, people like social workers, myself, head teachers, the deputy head, and any head of math and science and stuff to come together and have all this information on one platform that we can work together to support young people, to support an individual or a whole group of young people better by knowing things instantly. And for me, that's the other aspect of software and how do we use software in order to better young people's experiences in education, particularly young people that might be undiagnosed ADHD or autism, being autistic, dyslexic, because they're the ones that are going to hide at the back of the class. They're the ones that are going to kick off and make noise because they don't want people to know that they can't read properly. So if teachers have this information at hand on a system identifying these young people, it makes it easier for the teacher not to call that child out and that child behave in an inappropriate manner in the classroom. So this is where EduVantage started from. In my head, I wanted a program like this that we can actually connect the dots to better learning and engagement in the school.
Yes, Randy.
All right, cool. Thank you, Orlando, for your glowing tribute. I appreciate what you said just now. Take that into consideration. Sluggy, just to make sure that I'm answering the question you asked, just give me a recap, please, if you can.
No, you want to know any projects or programs that you personally did that you saw make an impact in a child's life? Because, for me, Orlando, and the reason why he asked this question is that we like talking to you all because I think it like solutions, man. You know what I mean? It ain't care what happened wrong or how far we take or how long we take or what bad. You know what I mean? They done with all that. I just want solutions that work and let me keep doing them. You get what I mean, Randy?
I understand totally. For me, I applaud Orlando for going the tech route with EduVantage. And it is a robust, education program. A learning management system. It really is a robust system. I had the opportunity to preview it and pre-see it. And I really think that is hands-on. It is easy to use. The user interface is quite interesting and quite simple. For me, I think things that work kind of happen impromptu, because getting into teaching, there are so many dynamics, and you have to learn that and understand that sometimes on the fly. You're trained in education, you're trained in pedagogy and methodology. However, you must also understand you have to be able to pivot on a dime in a classroom, in a band setting, wherever. If you're out on the pasture with a group of children, it doesn't matter. If you're going to be encouraging learning, you must be able to pivot on a dime. So a lot of the things that worked for me were innovations and intuition that happened on that dime. Similarly, I think the school band was one, of course. We had an audio tech team, and that was started because of that one youngster that Sluggy always speaks about, Shamar Coons, who was the baddest in the school, and he saw me setting up, because I was, as a music teacher, I was the person setting up the sound system. He prepares every morning. He saw me doing that, and someone had interest. And I told him, well, if you're interested in this, then, you know, come here and meet me every single morning, such and such time. And he did that. And he eventually saw other students coming because they saw him come in as well. So whether they looked up to him as a senior student or because he was bad and said, well, he turned around, he left, are you doing something positive? No. I think there's something he get involved in. So I said, okay, I'm going to start the school audio tech team. And that team was a formal team. They actually had to report on mornings to the leader. Of course, Shamar ended up being the leader of the team. They had a roster. They would assist teachers. Teachers were able to call on their services for support, for tech support within the school. Audio support, and that gave them a sense of responsibility. I'll use the word entitlement loosely, and entitlement only because it's like the common entitlement that people don't like. But these kids had an entitlement that I'm part of the audio tech team. You can't just talk to me, you know. And it gave them a Sluggy with that experience. It gave them a lot of pride, you know. They had probably had a shirt that said tech team, or you know, and that helped them to feel as though they were a part of something, and that they there were someone. They were not just an ordinary student, right?
That had to separate them, because them the known in school. You know that all your children, I tell you, were known in the school as known, something.
Exactly. Because that's how they will walk around. They will walk around the school. That you can't just ask me to do this. I'm part of the tech team. You know who? Yeah. You know that's how they felt. You know they were really proud about it. You know. You had to still then show them, well, you know, you're still a student, you know, you still have to find the middle ground and understand where it still has to be done, et cetera. So there were a lot of life lessons coming. There were a lot of life lessons for me at the same time too, because understanding their background, understanding how to cater to their needs, how to facilitate what they wanted at the point in time. For example, taking Shamar then to QSI and having him expand on his technical skills with them, that was another thing that I saw, you know, work with him. And I mentioned Shamar only because his story is probably the most prominent. However, you have about 12 other youngsters who are working in the industry through that tech program. To mine would be Neatro Spencer, Jacoby Paris, Javan Aline, who are all working with various sound companies at different levels. There are other students who have been working in the industry in tech, in stage management, all because they've had the opportunity to go and do hands-on work experience. Mylon Clark, now, I was Mylon's music teacher and also his sax tutor. And I kind of had to trick Mylon because I saw the enthusiasm, you know. And at that time, like I told you, it's like I was coming out of playing because education was the focus. And I would tell Mylon, well, you know, I exaggerated a lot. I said, it's 9 to 12 hours of practice every day. He was like, cheese on, sir. You got to do that? I said, yeah, man. So he would call me at night. You know, I literally burn from teaching, I'm laying down. Like, so, sir, I just learned this new piece here. What are you doing? I said, well, you practicing too? He's like, for real? All right, you gonna go practice too? And he's gonna practice the entire night because he think that he's practicing.
But I tell you what, guys, I hate to interrupt, but it is 7:30 in beautiful Barbados, and we're wrapping up at 7:35. So, Sluggy, I'm sure you want to get some closing comments from your guests.
Okay, 7:35. We got 5 minutes, no problem. Thank you a lot, Ollie. Be at your rhythm and worry. Continue, Randy.
I'll wrap it up quickly. So pretty much, I think creating opportunities and being able to pivot on the dime and presenting those opportunities in a way that children feel like they're part of something, that they have actually contributed in a meaningful way, and then they're learning at the same time. I think those are the things that really saw like changing experiences for the children, and then by extension for me, you know, opening my eyes to what children want, what they want access to, what they actually need, to give them that feeling and sense of belonging and a place in this world.
Well, yes, and programs like that, I think, is needed, and that's something that could be copied. And for me, my dream is to see that copy from even the primary school level. So yes. I think so we will have children far more skilled and experienced and equipped to get into secondary school. So that is that
for the academic, you know, and that's what you mean by pivot on a dime. You can't just stick to chalk and talk, but educators shouldn't be doing that either. But you have to be able to pivot, you know, quickly and realize, okay, every child in this classroom has a different level of, they have a different level of skill. They have multiple intelligences, right? So it's not just academic intelligence, but you have intelligences at various levels, and you must be able to cater to those intelligences.
Yes, and Orlando.
Hi.
Thanks a lot for coming on. I want to give you the last word. I want to give you about 2 or 3 minutes. Because I asked you a question that I really want you to answer. So I want you to take your time. So for these last 3 minutes, what do you think exchange programs are important? Because we plan to do a couple, what do you think exchange programs are important? And what do you think is the way forward for education? Last 3 minutes, over to you, my brother.
Thank you. I think exchange programs are extremely important, particularly for disadvantaged young people that would never have the chance to experience different culture, other than what they know in their little, what I call the little bubble that they live in their community. So having a wider vision on what the world is like and what people their age is like and doing in another country is paramount. As far as I'm concerned, hence the reason why 2 years ago with my school we started bringing students to Barbados to have them in a involved in the culture here, meeting young people their age and understanding the difficulties that they're having here in comparison to what they're having back in the UK.
Well, yes,
yeah, yeah, and here's where I met you, Sluggy, regarding to this connection and doing it in reverse, because I realize the English government, the UK, the government in the UK realizes, because this is funded by the Department for Education in London. My student exchange is funded by the government in England. And they realized it was absolutely amazing giving young people a chance to do that. And I think this was repeated to me when we came last with my students, and I went into the House of the House of Commons. Is it called the House of Commons?
Yes.
And I met with some of the ministers there, and they just pretty much, it was a reflecting mirror, and they wanted to do the same thing. And I was excited to have young people from Barbados traveling, particularly in a disadvantaged community, and wouldn't have any chance in actually traveling abroad, be having to your program, the program that the peace program you're running, in order to have that ability, and asking me to be involved in that was I was absolutely amazed.
No, my pleasure, man. It's our pleasure.
Yeah, I was absolutely happy to be part of this. So. And that's, we're going to be doing that soon. That's going to be happening next year. But you said we're looking for 2 students over the Christmas. So I'm still working on that for you.
Yes, next year will be 20 for sure. I will see you this year for Christmas for sure. Taking a break, a week or two break around Christmas, and we're gonna continue this conversation for sure. When you're in London, although like people know early quickly, it'll be about 11 o'clock. Out by you, but sorry for keeping it up late when you get back down, but we're going to continue this conversation next week Saturday, if you don't mind coming on the radio at 11 o'clock London time.
He's still in Barbados, you know. He's in Barbados. Oh no,
I'm in Barbados. Oh, no, but
until next week Saturday as well.
I'm leaving on Sunday.
He's leaving Sunday.
Oh, good, you good, then. We continue. We do part, Randy. Let me do part two next week. Saturday, Randy.
Yeah, that's cool.
I love it. Next week, we'll talk about exchange programs, Ollie, why exchange programs are important and the things that we should be doing and making sure the children learn and experience while we have these exchange programs. You know, there's a lot to talk about. So we'll do that next week. This is BOB 92.9 FM, the nation's number one station. Big up management, Mr. Randy Eastman of Quantum Productions. Big up my brethren, Orlando, Clement, Ollie on the inside on the control tower. Be a generator, my rhyme, every single Saturday at 6:30 p.m. The nation's number one show. And thanks for making me number one. This is your favorite, Uncle Sluggy, Randy Eastman. Thank you very much. I got your number one show on the island on the number one station. Ollie, thanks a lot, my brother. Over to you.